Didn't happen. So today we are continuing on in Exodus, and we're going to talk about God being our provider. So he provided technology and the PowerPoint working, so we can be grateful for that. So I'm going to go ahead and pray for us again, just because you can never pray enough. So I'm going to lead us in prayer here, and then we'll get started. Well, Lord, just thank you so much that you provide for us. Thank you for the story of the Exodus, that we can glean so much information about who you are. Thank you that you have rescued us from the dominion of darkness and put us in your kingdom of light. Just pray for clarity today and some really good open hearts that we can hear from you. Amen. So sometimes God and his humor likes to teach us before we teach something about the topic we're teaching. So my furnace died in the middle of the week, and I thought, oh man, maybe I get to learn about God's provision. So it's been an interesting weekend, but luckily God provided heat for my family, so that's good. So let's go ahead and go into our passage here. So what has happened before is that we have seen the Exodus. We saw the plagues. Pharaoh and Moses went ahead. God showed ultimately that he is sovereign. We get to see that God revealed himself to his people as Yahweh, the great I am. And as we have been going through this, we have seen different characteristics of God. One, that he is powerful, that he can take down any major power in the world like Egypt. We see that he is merciful, that he has great compassion for his people. And we also see that he is sovereign, that he is leading his people out of Egypt and is going to eventually lead them into the promised land. We see that God has rescued his people. So just to look back in Exodus 3, we see the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So God is compassionate. He heard the cry of his people, and he went and he rescued them. So you would think after this experience that it just would be, everybody would be super excited and worshiping the whole time, and it would just be, you know, ultimate high of like, God is so good. Well, we see that they, in Exodus 15, the beginning, a song of praise, but then we go ahead and see a few days later, things don't go so well. So we're going to take a look at that and see what happens right after the parting of the Red Sea. They leave. Do the Israelites, are they just constantly grateful to God who rescued them? Let's check it out. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, what shall we drink? We're not too far in, and there's already some complaints. So since I'm a visual person, I wanted to put this up here just for you, so maybe you could see kind of where we're at. Now, I picked this one because there's a lot of debate where they crossed the Red Sea, where the journey up to Canaan is, so I picked one that had multiple options. However, I think that probably the southern one makes the most sense based on the descriptions. So up at the top here, we see the wilderness of Shur. They come over the Red Sea. They eventually are going to head down, and they think Mount Sinai is the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula. So that's kind of where we're headed. Okay, there's no water. Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them. And he said, if you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they camped there besides the waters. So they had no water. We know from modern science that 3 days in, if you haven't had any water, you are in deep trouble. So maybe this kind of explains like what happened to all the gratitude and we've been rescued. Maybe they're feeling really dehydrated. However, we're going to see later on that they continually grumble against the Lord. So I wanted to make a note of this part here. This is not, this is a little bit of a side note that as we've been going through Exodus, we have been seeing different ways that God describes himself. Here we see the Lord am your healer. This is the word Yahweh Rapha, which just means God heals. I'm talking about provision today, so I'm not going to camp out on that. But again, the illustration is that if you were to meet me for the first time, you might get a sense of like, oh, this girl likes to study the Bible. As we got to know each other more, you might be like, oh, she's also a mom. Oh, she also is a wife. Oh, she thinks that she's an athlete. Some things like that. You might get to see like different sides of a person. And so we see in the Old Testament that God is also doing that, that his people get to see different sides of him. And so sometimes he'll give himself titles just to explain to his people, I'm also a healer. So that's Yahweh Rapha. We're not going to focus on that one because we're talking about provision. Okay, so God shows himself here as the provider. This word, we see the first time God mentions himself as a provider is in Genesis 22. Jehovah Jireh, or also Yahweh Jireh, just basically means God, your provider. So here we see that Israel had a basic physical need. Humans need to drink and eat to survive. So God heard this complaint. He takes care of this need. But during this, we see that Israel begins to grumble against the leadership God has put in their lives. They grumble against Moses. This is going to be a theme throughout the wanderings in the wilderness, that there's a lot of complaining. So let's keep going. Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Okay, we'll throw Aaron in there. First it was Moses, now we're going to grumble against Aaron. More complaints from the nation of Israel. The sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we have died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you." I'm going to pause there. Because, what? They have selective memory problems. We read back the sufferings of Israel. It was not a party. This is looking like they were sitting around, enjoying their meat, eating their bread. Everything was really, really cool. So better that we had died in Egypt. You brought us out here to suffer. So I want us to think for a second about times that we maybe are grumbling or complaining and how easy it is to look at the past and romanticize, you know, oh, that home church was better. Oh, that time that I was doing this, that was a lot better. And we kind of forget all the negative stuff that was going on too. I find myself thinking like, oh yeah, those were the glory days, which is really silly. But it's easy to kind of have selective memory about the past. And so this is what they're doing. They're like, those were the good old times. And we read the beginning of Exodus. We know better. They know better too, but they have forgotten what it was like to suffer in Egypt. Okay, so they're hungry. So God comes and he says to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, "At evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us?" So Moses and Aaron are questioning, you know, what are we that you grumble against us? They're going to unfold a little bit of what is going on deeper when we start grumbling against people. When we start complaining about the provision that we feel like we don't have. So keep that in mind. So here, grumbling again. Again, hunger is a physical need. I taught my daughter the word hangry the other day because she was getting real grumpy. And so I asked her, like, are you hungry? And she's like, yeah. So these guys were in this situation where they were hungry, they needed to eat, and so they grumble again. So Moses comes back. Moses said, this will happen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and bread to the full in the morning. For the Lord hears your grumblings, which you grumble against him. And what are we? Your grumblings are not against us, but against the Lord. Wow. That statement is really, really profound. So these guys think, Moses is not doing his job. Where's the bread at? Where's the water at? We'll throw Aaron in there. He's doing a terrible job too. And we realize that underneath that, our complaint is against God. That's kind of a big deal. So in this part here where they're hungry, Israel grumbles. Moses and Aaron points out that they're actually grumbling against God's provision. And that grumbling is a sin. Now, I struggle with this a lot because it's so easy. I just told you my furnace died. I was not in a great form of mind when that happened, thinking about we have to replace this. This is really frustrating. I'm teaching on Sunday. I got a lot going on. The grumbling started to flow freely. My circumstances suck. This sucks. Why would this happen now? And what underneath that is that I'm grumbling against God. He's not surprised my furnace went out. God's never surprised by things. My husband pointed that out once when I had to teach last minute. I was like, bleh. He's like, he's not surprised. He's got everything you need to go do this. And so when we realize when we're complaining against our circumstances, maybe we're frustrated with whoever our boss or whoever is in leadership or just any of that, that our real beef is with God. And that is a really, really hard thing to stomach and a very important thing to understand. Okay. I wanted to show this because I think it's funny, but also I think that we do this as well. So this is later when they are wandering for 40 years. Israel makes this statement that I think is really good. So they spoke against God and against Moses and said, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread, there is no water, and we detest this miserable food. Which is it? Do they not have food or do they hate the food? And so I think, like, you know, it's, again, easy to be like, come on, Israel. But I think in my heart, too, I do that often of, like, I'm just saying contrary statements of, like, circumstances suck and this is terrible. And, you know, I think that that's true for us as well, that sometimes we oftentimes will say silly things like this in our when we're grumbling. So, yep. Let's keep moving. Then Moses said to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. It came about as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the sons of Israel that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. So this part here, God is not only in their midst, he's making himself very visible. So we'll see later that during the day, God appears as a pillar of cloud, and at night, a pillar of fire. And so when we're looking at these guys, we get to see that God not only hears their grumblings, it shows that he's frustrated with it, but that he is giving so many provisions to these guys despite that. That he does take care of their physical needs. That he does know that they need evidence that he's there. And I think that that shows a side of God that has great compassion and willingness to overlook deep sin, which we'll talk about in a minute. Okay, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the grumblings of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So it came about at evening that the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. Okay, so here again, God is showing his glory. He's providing food to let them know, I want you to remember that I am God. God often commands, remember, remember. And so as he's going through here again, he provides their physical needs, just so that you know, I am the Lord. When the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness, there was a fine flake-like thing, fine as the frost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it every man as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer apiece according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent. The sons of Israel did so, and some gathered much and some little. When they measured it with an omer, he who had gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. Moses said to them, let no man leave any of it until morning. But they did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it until morning. And it bred worms and became foul. And Moses was angry with them. They gathered it morning by morning, every man as much as he should eat. But when the sun grew hot, it would melt. Okay. I think it's funny how anytime God puts parameters around something, there's always a couple of people that are like, well, we'll see if it's going to actually be right. You know, so there's a couple of people that are like, we're going to store it and see. And of course, it became really disgusting. So God hears the grumblings of his people. He takes care of their physical needs anyway, and he provides them manna. And the word manna literally translates, what is it? So, yeah. So here we learn from Psalm 78, too, a little bit more about this manna. He rained down manna upon them to eat and gave them food from heaven. The people ate the bread of angels. He sent them food in abundance. So this is some sort of special heavenly bread. I was talking to my daughter about this, and she's like, will we get to try this heavenly bread? And I was like, I don't know. But yeah, so this is some special provision from God. Bread of the angels that they would get every morning was a very radical provision that God provided for the Israelites. Okay, now on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, then he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside until morning as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul, nor was there any worm in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none. It came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. So here we have, again, the parameters. God's like, don't go out and gather. Somebody's like, I'm going to try it, see what happens. And of course, it wasn't there. Next, then the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? Pretty simple instructions, right? Don't, you know, take what you need for the day. Don't overgather. Don't go out on the Sabbath. And these guys are just like, huh? I don't know. So God's getting a little bit frustrated here. You know, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Okay. So God, in his provision, provides people rest. We'll talk about that in a second. The house of Israel named it manna, and it was like coriander seed, white, and its taste was like wafers with honey. Then Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer full of it be kept throughout your generations, that they may see the bread that I feed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. So I don't really know what this would look like exactly, but I did get a picture, and I don't know how accurate this is. I mean, it's a little dark, but I was just trying to get, like, what would this have even looked like going out and gathering this, you know, angelic bread? So here's kind of an example. It seemed like it was wafer-like, tasted like honey. You know, I'm sure that it would have really good nutrients if it's heavenly bread. So there's a picture for you. Okay. Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer full of manna in it and place place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept. The sons of Israel ate the manna 40 years until they came to an inhabited land. They ate the manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is a tenth of an ephah. Interesting information. Now, because we've talked about omers a lot, I'll just kind of explain what it is. So, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying this right. Ephah is basically a basket that they would bathe in. So if you can think like a circle that a person could fit in. And so an omer full is a tenth of that. So just fun fact for that part there. Okay, so we're taking a jar, put an omer full of manna in it, place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. So this part down here, if you have seen Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, this part, some of your Bibles will actually clarify Ark of Testimony. Mine just says testimony, but they actually took this manna and they put it into the Ark of the Covenant. There were three items in there, and one of them was the manna, which represents God's provision. And we see later that Israel fails to trust in the provision of God. And that is one of the, you know, things that God has against them, is that you rejected my provision. So that is a different teaching altogether, but very interesting that God's like, I want to put that aside. This represents a way greater issue that this nation was struggling with. Okay, so here we have the Sabbath observed. So one of the ways that God provides for us physical needs, I think a lot of us here probably are not too concerned about getting water. I mean, we have water over there. Or like maybe where our next meal is, we have great bake sale desserts over there. So I think we're good on that end. But I think a lot of us probably struggle with this idea of rest. Our culture is busy. It's noisy. It's at any moment I could get 10 text messages, my blood pressure shoots up. You know, like we are in a culture that's fast paced and we don't know how to slow down and rest. I don't know if you struggle with this, but you know, we often view our day off or weekend as a time to catch up on something or to do a massive project or, you know, something like that, that we're like, any free time needs to be filled with something. One of the ways that you might, you know, realize this might be you is, do you feel guilty for resting? I struggle with this at times. Sometimes I will take some time off and just, you know, read a book or watch a show, and I feel like I'm wasting time. And I realize that guilt is that I feel like every moment of every day needs to be productive. And I realize that God sees that. He's like, you know, I did prescribe rest. That is the way that I provide for you, is that I step in and basically say it's important to rest. A lot of times this is putting our phones down. I see this with a lot of, you know, high school students or whatever. They're just on their phones all the time. And there are studies that have come out that the more access, you know, you get addicted to these devices, and anytime you get something on your phone, you have to go check it out. And so we are constantly connected. We are constantly available to people. And sometimes it's really hard, even I'm going to put myself in this, to just turn it off for a few hours. So in the busyness and noise of our culture, God prescribes and provides rest. So maybe this is one that you're like, man, I don't really know how to do that. And the Bible has some interesting answers for that. And I think it's interesting that God's like, I know you. I know that if you go too hard, you're going to, you know, your body will make you rest. For me, it's often I get sick. So now I have to take a break. So I think that that's an interesting thing that God provides for his people is rest. Okay, let's keep going. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" Okay, so we're thinking, okay, I just heard the story about water. God provided water. Okay, you know, they're hungry. God provided bread and meat. here we are again, no water. What do they do? They start fighting with Moses. So, yep, haven't learned their lesson yet. But the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, "Why now have you brought us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do to this people? A little more and they will stone me." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. And take your hand, your staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock of Horeb. And you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses said so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He named the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Well, wait a second. I thought God was there in a pillar of cloud. Wait, I thought he already provided these things. So here again, we see that they grumble. A lot of grumbling. I'm sure some of us parents are like, yeah, seen that before. Moses points out at this point, the people are so upset, they are about to stone him. And yet, God provides them water. This story is real interesting. We'll come back to it. They struck the rock provided water. Don't forget that. We'll come back to it. Okay, moving on. We get to see Moses' father-in-law come into the picture. Now, Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Moses' wife Zipporah after he had sent her away, and her two sons, of whom one was named Gershom, for Moses said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." The other was Eleazar, for he said, "The God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he had camped. At the Mount of God, he sent word to Moses, "I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her." Then Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had befallen them on the journey and how the Lord had delivered them. Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel in delivering them from the hand of the Egyptians. So Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, and who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. It came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until the evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this thing you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand about you from morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people came to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor and make known the statutes of God and his laws." Okay, so there's a couple things going on here. First, they don't have text messages. They don't have emails. How did Jethro know that the Israelites were coming? Well, a few weeks ago, I think I taught before, but I was talking about how one of the reasons why the Exodus was necessary was that God would be proclaimed in the whole world, that people would hear about it, and then they would know that the God of the Israelites, was God. And so here we see an example of he is not in Egypt. He is from Midian, and he has caught word of what has happened in Exodus. And this is before satellites, so this is incredible, word of mouth. So Jethro comes with Zipporah and Moses' sons. It is very possible that maybe Moses is like, "I don't know if bringing my wife and sons would be a good idea in this showdown with Pharaoh." Or also the last time we see Moses and Zipporah interact, they kind of have a little bit of a disagreement. You should check that out. It's a very interesting part. But basically, they could have had an argument, and Moses is like, you stay. I have to go confront Pharaoh. I think either way probably makes sense. I'm not sure I'd want my kids to go where there's hail and stuff like that. So, yeah. So Jethro comes. They kind of catch up. But then as Jethro is observing Moses, he sees a major problem. He sees that Moses alone sits as judge. So when people have minor disputes, maybe somebody, you know, took some of my manna, got real upset about it. We talk to Moses. Moses is like, here, out of, you know, God's ordinances, here's how we handle the situation. So Jethro's watching this, and he's watching Moses from morning until evening take all of the complaints of the people, which we know they complain a lot. So it probably was really, really exhausting. So Jethro decides to offer some advice to Moses on how to better handle his role as spiritual leader to these people. So let's check out what advice he gives. Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I give you counsel, and God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God." Okay, so he points out right away, if you continue this way, you will burn out. These people will also get more angry. So he kind of sees, like, look, I'm assessing the situation. There's something not right here. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Teach them the statutes and the laws, and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and work, and the work they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. So Jethro is basically prescribing delegation. He is saying, pick good people of good character to learn the statutes of the Lord. You can teach them how to handle these situations, and then this will not be overly burdensome for you. So I think it's important, too, that, you know, he puts these qualifications on them of, like, they need to have good character. This happens in the New Testament as well. Like, if you think about in Acts when they're doing kind of some service ministries with orphans and widows, and some of the main apostles are like, we need to delegate this. And their qualification was like, we need spirit-filled people to do this. So again, it's not just anyone. You want to be a judge? Here, be a judge. It's like, find good quality people to pass this work to. Let them judge the people at all times, and let it be that every major dispute they bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace. Bearing the burden. This is definitely a biblical principle. Think about Galatians. Bear each other's burdens. So one of the ways when we're talking about God providing is that God provides his spiritual leaders with people to help. That as a body of Christ, we are together, we help each other. And that is a provision from God. So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he had said. Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. They judged the people at all times, the difficult dispute they would bring to Moses, but every minor dispute they themselves would judge. Okay, so this to me is a very interesting point. I'm trying to imagine myself being in the position of Moses. I have the divine authority to be God's spokesperson. I have just been part of these big miracles in Egypt. I am God's instrument to these people. And what's really, really cool and a good example of what a spiritual leader is that they're humble and teachable. He listened to Jethro. He could have been like, I'm Moses, you know, do you know who I am? But he didn't. He's like, you know what? I'm going to take this counsel. So I think when we're looking at what type of people are spiritual leaders, they are humble and they are teachable. And I think that this is a great example of how God provided. Jethro saw a problem. Jethro pointed out the problem, offered a solution, and Moses took his advice. Then Moses bade his father-in-law farewell, and he went his way into his own land. Okay, so a second here on delegation in leadership. Jethro advises Moses to delegate. Leadership is more effective with delegation. Instead of having one person do 100 jobs, how about 100 person do one job? We're more effective at those jobs. We also see that this is kind of early forms of discipleship, that teaching others God's law. We see that all of Jesus' ministry was teaching others, discipleship, passing and trusting this message to people to then teach others. So we see this kind of example here that Moses takes people, he teaches them the word, he teaches them how to judge, and they go and they do it. Okay, so this is from Oswald Sanders' Spiritual Leadership. He has a whole chapter on the art of delegation. This is my favorite book on spiritual leadership ever, but here's a quote from him. "It is a big mistake to assume more duties than we can discharge. There is no virtue in doing more than our fair share of the work. We do well to recognize our limitations. Our Jethros can often discern better than we can the impact of all of our duties, and we should listen to them. If we break natural law, humans must sleep as well as work. For example, we cannot be exempt from repercussions. If we succumb to human persuasion and take on more than we should, God will not accept, he will accept no responsibility for the outcome." So I think it's interesting how a lot of times we don't know how to rest, but then also sometimes we might take on more roles than we need to do. And that often that makes us feel burdened. That often it's better to share the load. And that's why we, you know, in this church, we have multiple leaders. We try to teach everyone the word. We try to empower people to take on roles so that we can bear each other's burdens. But I think this is a good point. I think sometimes we take on roles that maybe God is not calling us to. And it's a good point to think about. Is this thing that I'm going towards something that God has called me to? Okay. God, our provider. So we have a couple different things going on here. A couple motifs in the Bible. And just to kind of wrap it up into the New Testament image of who we know God is through the person of Jesus. So this concept of water. I think that God is very clever to have themes running through Old Testament, New Testament. Jesus will say something, you're like, what? But then in light of reflection of everything going on, you're like, that makes perfect sense. So first, this is what Jesus says about himself. "But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." So Jesus says that he has eternal water and kind of relates the idea of this physical need for water as a deeper spiritual need for a relationship with God. Just to throw something in here that's really fascinating. In 1 Corinthians 10, when it's talking about the wandering in the wilderness, it says this, "And drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ." That passage is really confusing. But what I think it does is that it explains that there is a deeper spiritual need that we have, and that Christ is going to meet that need. And so was the rock physically Christ? Maybe. God could do that. But it's connecting the two. This need that we have is ultimately a need for Jesus. Okay, so that's water. What about bread? Think about John 8. "Then Jesus declared, 'I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty.'" Jesus explains, "I am the bread of life." So he's connecting the dots again between physical need, you know, the stuff in this, the Old Testament, we're hungry. Jesus is like, "I have something deeper. I have something that will last eternally." And then if you think about, basically the first communion. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, broke it, the bread, and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." So again, that connection comes in. Also, the idea of rest. This could be a whole other teaching, so I'm not going to explain it too much, but that Jesus offers true rest. And he also cares greatly for his leaders. Spiritual leadership is hard. And I'm not talking about a title. I'm talking about if you serve a single person, you are in some sort of spiritual leadership. He cares about you. He wants you to succeed in that role. He provides rest. He provides aid. He provides everything. And looking back at Jehovah Jireh, God our provider, the first time that we see this name is in Genesis 22. It is referring to God and the sacrifice of Isaac. And we see that when God himself provided a sacrifice, that's when he said, "I'm your provider." And so we can't talk about God our provider without talking about the main message of the Bible, which is that God has offered his own sacrifice for our sin. That because we're human, we make mistakes, we hurt one another. You know, if you think you're good, but then you realize grumbling's bad too, that's really hard to hear. But we all have made mistakes. And so because of that, we have alienation with God. And there's a great gap between us. And so God's like, "You know what? I'm going to take care of that gap. I'm going to send Christ, who's going to live a perfect life, who is going to die for each one of you. And through simply asking for a relationship with him, we now can have a relationship with God." And that is the essence of Jehovah Jireh, that he is the one that provided the sacrifice. So if you're here today and you've never made that decision to start a relationship with God, that's where it starts. That's where rest comes from. That's what Jesus is talking about with the eternal water, the bread of life. That's what it is. And I want you to know that God cares about your physical, emotional, and most importantly, spiritual needs. He cares about, you know, our furnaces. He cares about, you know, your relationships. He cares about everything. Talks about in Matthew, "Consider the lilies of the field, you know, they are taken care of. How much more will God take care of you?" And so also, Israel failed at trusting him. Again, this provision is put in the Ark of Testimony that later God's like, "You failed here." But also, we failed too. But good thing when we first meet Yahweh, that great I am, we see his great mercy. And that mercy comes through Jesus and his grace. And even when we mess up now and we're grumbling against the Lord, he doesn't hold us against us because he sees Christ in us. And he shows great mercy and compassion and can help us learn different ways to live and not grumble so much. But yeah, so Jehovah Jireh. Okay, if you are a first-time guest here, you get a free book over at the Welcome Center. If you have any feedback for us, you can, when we bring around, I think, yeah, some people have it in their handouts. You can put what you think of the meeting here or anything on there. We'll read it, check it out. Also, if this is your church, feel free. We're going to pass around, what do we call them? The bucket. I don't know. You can feel free to put money in there. If you're a guest here, please don't feel any obligation to do that. Also, parents with kids, they will be released at 11:45. So prepare yourself. Okay, so let's talk about comments, questions, experiences about this. Yes.
You know, it's easy to read over through this section and just say, "Oh my gosh, how dense are the Israelites?" And then when you really sit down and think about it, I'm just as dense as they are. You know, I forget my wilderness. Seriously, I am here again, whether it's from my failing or circumstances or whatever. Just a month or two ago, I'm just screaming at God in my backyard of a circumstance that we're having. I'm going through and I'm cursing and I am throwing the biggest infantile fit that I think I've thrown in a long time. And I share a lot of my faith or my fits in this group. So it was bigger than anything before. And God said, are you done yet? No, I'm not. So I went on a couple more minutes and then literally again, are you done? Yes. And this voice, sit down. Okay. And I need you to listen. And it was literally through what he did with the Israelites. Do I need to remind you what I've done? And he did. You know, and that was a sweet moment to be able to have that moment to reflect with God what he's done, the provisions he's provided, the needs that he's met, the hope that what's in the future, that I will continue to do that in your life. It was just a sweet moment. So I just encourage me for anybody who like has those wildernesses that God just doesn't leave us in those wildernesses. So let us stomp our feet in the mud puddle. But eventually he's like, all right, eat him yet?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm with you. I think like the more that I grow with God, the more I realize like I am Israel. I complain all the time and stuff, and how gracious God is to meet us in that and kind of lovingly remind us, like, you know, do you remember who I am or what I've done? Like, I think that that's just part of his great compassion for us. Yeah, it's a great point. Anybody else?
Okay, like Dawn, it is too easy to go through this story and critique the character of the Israelites, and also through the book of the Judges, right? Yeah. Those books. It's you know, it's easy to think, oh my God, how could anybody be so dense? But of course, God likes to enlighten us when we are inclined that way. And for me, what I've found is, My dissatisfaction with the provision of God is more the passive aggressive type.
Okay.
You know, I don't go screaming at God or other people about it, but I just kind of go on strike and piss and whine and mope and effectively the same attitudes. I'm just a little quieter about it. And you know, God will show me in those times, like I think happened with Dawn. You know, I'm still here for you. You know, check your attitude. Remember who I am and the provisions that I have for you and my care for you. And so I just wanted to share that. And I have a question for you. Yeah. You happen to know, I believe, I don't know if it's Exodus or where that comes from, but wasn't it true that that manna cared for the people physically in the form of there was no illness among them? Did you know where that is?
Interesting that you say that. I had said that in a teaching before, and someone was like, where is that in scripture? And so I searched through, and I was like, I don't know, but I think it's from that part that they're like, if you keep my statutes, I'm not going to put any of those diseases on you. So I know in Psalms it talks about their clothes didn't wear out, that there was a lot of like supernatural provision there. But I think that particularly comes from this Exodus passage. But I did have someone say, show me that verse. So I was like, I don't know. But I think it's from that. But yeah. Sherry.
I have to be careful when you talk about rest, because a lot of times I'll be like, oh, I gotta rest. But I'll sit back and look at why. Who am I? Is it because I'm focused too much on work and things that I want to do and myself, versus do I need rest because I've overextended myself in a serving situation?
Yeah.
So I think when you find yourself there, it's a good point to, you know, step back and say, why is it that I need this rest? Where is my focus?
Yeah. 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 I think that's a great point. Good. Oh, Patrick. Ooh, okay. Patrick and then Mark.
I was just thinking about what you said, Miriam, your daughter said, about like wanting to try the manna. And it got me thinking of like, man, like they were so lucky that they had this like food coming from heaven, literally, and how like exciting that would be. And like not realizing what they had at the time, which then led me to how often I do that and how often I like take what I have for granted. And I'm not saying that like things in my life or things in other people's lives in this room aren't necessarily hard. We do experience hard things, but it is made much easier when I put into context like, oh, I was lucky to be born into America and like I have a house and a car and like there are so many people in the world that don't have the things that I could have. Which then just puts me to shame when I realize that I'm grumbling about something that I'm lucky to have anyway.
Yeah, for sure. There's a psalm that David talks about that his boundary lines fall in lovely places. And for me, it's something that I reflect on when I'm thinking about like, oh man, they had a better, oh, this over here and stuff. And how David was like, the provision God has given me is lovely. And so I try to like reflect on that. But you're right. It's like we have things that they wish they had back then. Holy Spirit, you know, like that provision and stuff like that. So I think it's easy to grumble against what we have and forget that what God has given us is good. Yeah.
Okay, so I've read this story a lot of times, and one of the things that I wonder is, had the people spent any time looking for food, looking for water, before they came and asked for God's provision? So the question that I have is really comes down to says, what part do we play in the provision of God? Because we can sit down in a chair and say, you know, God, bring it to me. Mm-hmm. Or we can be actively seeking, and then God directs us and gets there. So what part do we play in being in the right place at the right time, doing the right things for God to be able to provide us that provision, rather than just kind of sitting back and saying, okay, God, take care of me, and I'm going to lay in my comfy couch and watch TV all day.
Yeah. I'm hungry, God. Could you give me the remote? And some chicken nuggets. Yeah. I think that's a really, really interesting question. Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to knowing God's promises. Like, there's times that, like, I always tell people, I'm like, if you, you know, are, like, looking for an opportunity to share your faith, that will happen. So when you pray, you better be watching. Somebody somewhere is going to, like, just be like, tell me about the Lord, or, like, start a relationship, or, like, want to talk about stuff like that. So I think a lot of it comes down to knowing scripture. These guys didn't have as much as we do. So I think knowing that, you know, we read a passage like in Matthew, like God's going to provide for all of our needs. So I think like there is a very active trust, you know, maybe it is through a job, maybe it is through, you know, other people. I think a lot of it is rooted in our understanding of the promises of God. That's a very general answer. But I think that that's part of it. Yeah. It might not have totally answered your question, but yeah. We have. Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes I think we have to distinguish between physical rest and spiritual rest. Sometimes you just have to get up three times in the night to feed the baby and you're exhausted, and finding that spiritual rest and saying, God, going to him and saying, I can't go on anymore. I don't have the energy. I don't have the strength, but I trust you to give me, like my husband says every day, just give me what I need each day. And you know, I try to think about that, that, you know, there's people say that the Bible says he won't give you more than you can handle. And I'm like, find that in the Bible somewhere, because he does give you more than you can handle, you know, because he wants us to trust him to handle it, to rely on his strength and his ability. So there are many times in my life where I realize I've been physically trying to do something that God doesn't want me to do, and I'm exhausted, and he wants me to come to him for that rest and stop get off that mouse wheel that goes around and doesn't take you anywhere.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just have to keep going and you have reached the end of yourself, but you have to go to him, you know, to find that spiritual rest.
Yeah.
If that makes sense or not.
No, it totally does. Because I think that sometimes we can actually not be all that busy, but we're still overwhelmed. And sometimes we can be very busy, but also feel at rest. So I think you're distinguishing those two are really important because they are different. I mean, he does take care of our physical rest, but more importantly, he wants us to rest spiritually. So yeah, great point. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and pray. If you want to pray, go ahead and raise your hand. They'll bring you a microphone and I'll close this up.